Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yo, what's up? This is your Alternative Facts for the week. I'm Chris Payne. I'm your host as usual. We've got another artist interview episode here. Today, talking with Laetitia from Vagabond, or Laetitia, aka Vagabond, from the band Vagabond. They all work. Just don't put a D at the end. It's Vagabond, not Vagabond. This is a pretty interesting talk. Laetitia's debut LP called Infinite Worlds came out earlier this year. We talked about it a lot in an episode a few weeks back where I had Gabriella and James from Stereo Gum on. We talked about our favorite albums of the year so far. So thought I would have her on. This turned out to be a pretty good instructional sort of conversation. She talks about how to start your own musical project in a grassroots DIY kind of way, write music, play shows, do it all on your own, get it out there. What sort of network outside can really help you with getting this stuff in the works? Because that's just what Vagabond did. Kind of came in from the outside, took indie rock, took that world by surprise. She plays guitar, but also makes music in Logic. So she's kind of hard to pin down, but really interesting, pushing things in some pretty neat directions. So I'm not going to talk anymore. First, here's a little bit of Vagabond's Cold Department playing us into the show so you get a feel for her, and then my interview with Laetitia. So Laetitia, Vagabond,
hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So right now you are in between two pretty big North American tours.
Yeah.
How's home life been?
It's been good. Working on a lot of music, which is nice because I've been going for a while and I haven't really had time to stop and just make things and see what works and see what doesn't. So that's been cool.
When you're on the road, are you like, oh man, I really want to be making music right now, but life.
Yeah, exactly. Or it's like, I'm going to demo this as soon as we load out right now. And then I just go to sleep. And so all of these ideas that I get randomly, I haven't found a good way to put them down yet. So I'm usually just like, when I'm home, I work on music.
Is there a song or a specific idea you're in the middle of right now?
Yeah. I have a song that I'm trying to finish before the week is over, and just have been struggling. But it's fine. It's kind of constantly that way. Just making music by myself essentially is just it's a lot harder, but it feels like a personal rewarding thing.
Cool. Because I mean, between the first EP and the album, people saw some of the songs. Even if they had slight title changes or pretty different title changes,
yeah.
People are used to seeing your tracks sort of evolve across time.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So these are Vagabond songs that you're working on now?
Yeah, I'm working on Vagabond songs. They have come from other projects, like doing like one-off things for some people or something. And just be coming into like, oh, okay, I have a reason to write this track. Huh. So I'm writing it, and then it turns into like more vagabond songs, which is cool.
Cool. Like what one-offs, just like hopping in the studio with someone, stuff like that?
Yeah, like doing sessions, which is something that I'm super interested in, just like songwriting. And so it's been really fun for me lately to go into studio sessions with producers, other writers, with no real objective. We're just like kind of showing each other music, what we're listening to, what we're into, what we're making. And we usually end up like writing a track or two by the end of it. So I've just been doing that to kind of break the writer's block I've been feeling.
Cool. And it sounds like you've been doing stuff on your own on the side too.
Yeah, yeah. So just trying to constantly make music. I don't have a ton of music to my name. I don't have a lot of music that I've written. So I'm just trying to make more and find out what I'm trying to do and just doing whatever comes out.
Cool. Is there a specific program or instrument you've been specializing in lately?
Oh, I'm like strictly Logic for now. Everything I make is on Logic. And I use a lot of Logic stock sounds. It's just what I have access to right now.
Yeah, because it makes me think of on the album. It was the instrumental track towards the middle of the album. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on
Malalez.
The name.
Malalez.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That sounds like a very Logic heavy endeavor.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a total computer song, with the exception of the synth. Which like I've been using a lot of like the MS-20 and like the Korg like bass synths. So a lot of stuff that I've been making since Malalez kind of work around those synths a lot.
Cool. And there's some like sampled voices and some spoken word sort of collage in there. Did some mm-hmm. of those come from the, you were saying those things that come with Logic?
Oh no, those are not stock
okay.
sounds.
So okay.
Yeah, no, I'm actually on that song, and a friend of mine, Eric Littman, I sampled his voice and a couple of things that he had on this ambient track on that song as well. And I think a lot of people thought that was a strange song to put on that record, but I like ambient music, and I just wanted to see if I could make it.
That came around towards the end of the process for the album, right?
Yeah, it was the last thing I did.
Huh. So this new album could be really different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I don't know if it's an album or what's coming. But.
Yeah. I'm just like trying to, I just want to like put out a mixtape and just like put it like a media fire link or like upload it on ThatPiff.
Okay.
And just do whatever I want.
Because there's all different ways people could differentiate between mixtape, album, yeah.
Right.
Playlist if you're Drake. So I guess your definition would be, the album would be coming out like Infinite Worlds, maybe the vinyl release, and it seems the mixtape for you would just be putting it onto the internet.
Yeah.
It's there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just like work, I don't want to think too much about it being cohesive or like the story of it. I just want to put a bunch of songs that I'm making right now onto one thing and just throw it out there.
Awesome. So I feel like we jumped way into the future, which is good, but you've done a lot of stuff in the recent past, present. So tell me about the tour. You played Pitchfork Fest,
yeah.
Probably a bigger one that you've done. You were going around Massachusetts. A lot of this you were just talking about captured very well in a story for Noisy by a friend of the podcast, Maria Sherman. So touring life, it's out there. Check it out. But tell me about this tour. How did it go?
It was really good. This was the first tour that I went on that I had headlining dates on, more than one, or like more than New York, or and it was really nice to see what kind of people would come to those shows after just kind of doing a lot of support stuff. And touring is my favorite thing to do. And Pitchfork, that was my first time going to Pitchfork Fest and playing it. And I had the most incredible time. And festivals rule. I don't know if everyone feels that way, but it's kind of sick.
Yeah, I've been to Pitchfork a bunch. I didn't make it out this past year, but I've been there a bunch. What were some of the highlights?
I really loved watching Jamila Woods. I was side stage for that, and I was just getting my life. There's just like a whole bunch of like beautiful black women just going insane. And I was like, this is crazy. This is so cool. That was one of my favorite sets. And Isaiah Rashad killed it. That was one of my favorite sets too. I can't even remember who else I saw, really.
I just saw Solange at Panorama.
Oh, yes, I saw Solange.
She headlined at Pitchfork.
Yeah, she was incredible. That's like, she like started twerking at one point, and I was like, this is insane, because it's, she goes from like this beautiful choreography to this beautiful twerking. It's nice.
And her backing bands, and they're pretty much playing their complicated instrument parts, putting down the instrument, then twerking, and then playing the instrument again.
Yeah, it's so good. They look like they're having so much fun.
Also, it seemed like early in the set she had maybe like 5 to 7 backing musicians, and then they just kept multiplying throughout the set. She had like a community on stage by
the
end.
So many people. I like the way she introduces her band too. She's like, I've known this guy for 20 years or whatever. It's nice.
Maybe a way you can start introducing your band as the band grows.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Introduce like the bassist. They do like a little fun little like groovy bass part. The drummer does like the hardest drumming part that they can play.
We kind of do that already. It's kind of fun. Or they like play a sample of like something they want. Sometimes when I have keys, they'll just like introduce the keys player and they'll play, I don't know, like the Twin Peaks song.
Right.
And it's whatever.
So you've got the full backing bands on the headlining tour, and you were mentioning that you were getting to see like what your fan base is like from finally not just being the opening band, but playing shows where it's like, all right, these people, most of them, safe to say they're coming out to see me. So
yeah,
how would you describe your fan base?
They're dedicated. It's cool. It's not a huge one. But it's a nice one. It's a nice motivated one. Like the people that would come, a few of the shows sold out, which were a lot to my surprise. And it was a nice surprise. And it was cool to, you know, whenever someone encores a show, I'm just kind of taken aback. And so it's, all that stuff is really fun. And it's nice to just grow. It's scary. It's risky. My record came out in February, and I wanted to go on a headlining run, and I wanted to bring who I wanted to bring. So I'm bringing the rapper Namdi, and I had to just like kind of assert myself in that position so I could do the tour that I love, you know? And so I'm really excited, however it goes.
And Namdi's your drummer too, right?
Namdi drummed for me for the tour that I just got off. So he played Pitchfork.
Gotcha.
But I interchanged drummers often.
Cool.
Yeah.
So take me through a day on tour when you're playing a show. Is it really busy with sound check, hanging around, playing the show, running to the merch table right after cleaning up the stage?
Yeah, it's now it looks more like kind of hectic. Wake up early, someone drives, maybe I drive, but usually I don't take first driving shift. I'm on the phone a lot during the day, so my band and whoever's traveling with me kind of takes the reins of like the gas and the driving for the earlier part, and then we sound check and everyone kind of does their own thing. I'm pretty like keep to myself, so I end up just going to another room or something and just staying in there, and we play the show. My really kind bassist clears up my stuff so that I can run to the merch table, and then we just roll out. We just like after the show's over, we go, we leave. We're those kind of people.
How are the hats selling?
The hats are, they sell out so fast because I hand stitched them.
Oh, okay.
And so there's only like a limited amount, but the hats are, everyone loves the hats.
Yeah, shout out to Gabriella Tully Claymore.
Oh, yes.
Okay, you know her. She has one of the hats that she
has the best. Yeah. That's the only one made in that color.
Exclusive. It was black, right?
Yeah, yeah. I sat in my apartment and hand stitched them. I was like, what are you doing?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So what parts of the country have you hit recently?
I've been just doing East Coast for a little bit, short runs, which are good. I did some new places with Tegan and Sarah in June, and that was still an East Coast run. And this most recent one only went out as far as the Midwest and Kentucky. So that's about it. But in this, on my headlining tour in the fall in September, I'm doing the full US again.
So, cool.
Yeah.
What was it like with Tegan and Sarah? Those must have been massive stages.
Yeah, those were huge shows. The biggest ones that I think I've ever played up until Lincoln Center, like Friday. But I really respect that whole thing. It's a whole production. They loaded in like 10 a.m. every day, and just lights and stage and gear techs and the whole thing. It was really cool to see. It was cool to see how a band like that operates, like their whole touring thing. You know, day rooms. I didn't even know that was a thing. And yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and they also do a ton of press still.
Yeah.
They're really committed to that.
Yeah, they do. I didn't grow up on Tegan and Sarah like most of the people that I know did. And so getting to know them in this context of seeing them play live is insane, because you see all of these people who have been listening to them for so long, and then the people who are just now listening to them, like me. Mm-hmm. And it's a great show. I thought it was a great show.
I feel like they appreciate someone who's fresh coming into the fandom, because they're probably just so used to diehard old fans who are crying for like the album The Con that came out like 10 years ago. And like, it's probably neat for them to talk to new fans, especially because they're like recent two albums, they tried to be much poppier than they had in the past and just reinvent themselves.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm sure they appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. And they're super ear to the ground too. I was really, they would come into my green room every day. We would hang every day. They would talk about, you know, all my friends, Jason, Mitski, Julie Bird. They just like know everyone's music, and they genuinely listen to it. They love Snail Mail, Girlpool. It's kind of wild.
Sounds maybe like they're reading Stereo Gum.
They're reading something. reading.
How do they find you?
I don't really know. I think they're really up on it.
Yeah.
They like, I know that they're familiar with the Pitchfork Rising piece, and then I just like, they just DM'd me, and then we started chatting, and then it turned into a tour thing.
Yeah, you've done a lot of, I think, just really interesting in-depth press pieces. You mentioned the Rising for Pitchfork, the Noisy tour diary, and also the Creative Independent story. On the website, The Creative Independent, for those listening, check that one out. Kind of a backstory on how to get like an indie DIY sort of life off the ground. So with all this great press, like, what does press mean to you?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I think I'm still trying to figure it out, because there are some things like the Pitchfork Rising piece that really, before being on it, what I wasn't too familiar. I grew up in a whole different world. Grew up by, like, I went to college for engineering. Like, I wasn't really clued into a lot of the things that people who have been in like live music world since they were teenagers know about. And so with the Pitchfork thing, my whole like thought process was, well, this is the largest amount of people that I've talked to yet, or like that will probably read this. And so I'm going to make it meaningful. And I talked about this thing that was meaningful. I was like, I'm so smart. Like, this is really good. And it just got met with like very varying opinions. And so I'm still trying to understand what press even is, but I just try to keep it real and whatever else, it like doesn't even, I'm trying to not let it matter. Just be real.
Yeah, you've touched on a little bit where you came from, where you went to school, how you like weren't exactly raised on like Tegan and Sarah and like indie rock. But for the people listening, like go back just and summarize like where you came from, what you're about.
Yeah, I've been living in the US since I was 13 and have lived in New York the entire time. And before that, like lived in Cameroon, and that's where my family's from. But I consider myself a New Yorker at this point. I'm, you know, definitely old enough to say that. And it's, you know, went double majored in engineering at school and started playing music in 2014 when I was about to graduate.
And you were engineering student?
I was an engineering student, yeah.
Cool. And with making music and becoming Vagabond, that had a lot to do with the New York DIY venue, Silent Barn, right?
Yeah, yeah. Silent Barn, Shea Stadium, kind of both of those simultaneously, because I would play there almost every weekend at one point. So those people are really the ones who kept talking about my music, kept talking about my project, even when I wasn't playing, when I wasn't around. So I do like shouts out to those people because they kept it, you know, more of a thing. They kept telling everyone, they kept coming to shows and bringing other people and being like, you got to see this. And so that's sick.
Yeah, that's the truth. Yeah. Was Silent Barn or Shay one of the first show you played?
I played my first show at Silent Barn. Yeah, first show at Silent Barn. And I later noticed that that's pretty cool because there's so many places to play in New York. And,
yeah.
And it's one of the best ones.
Totally.
Yeah.
Was this before you had the Persian Garden EP out?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you were playing live before you were actually releasing music.
Yeah, because to me it was like, that's how you get better. Like, I'm not good at all. Like, I need to get better. So I have to play a bunch of shows, and I have to get not, and I was terrified. I'm very shy, and so like being on stage is not, like, it's not like a skill set that I already had, and so I just wanted to get better at it.
And this was when you had no backing band, when it was just you.
Yeah.
So yeah, what was that like?
It was great. Like, I am so glad that I am just like a lone musician that sometimes has a band, because playing by yourself is totally different and there's way less crutches. Even the way that I write changes when I'm playing by myself versus when I know I'm going to have people supporting me. So I'm glad that I did that first and not try to do it after.
Was it scary at all?
It was scary, yeah. Yeah. But I just have a strange thing, and the things that I want to do, like, I really, really go in about doing it. And so there was no way that I was not going to do it.
Yeah. What songs are you playing at this point?
Oh my God. I've been playing Cold Apartment Floors, Cold Apartment for so long. That's the first song that I ever wrote. And I can't believe I'm still playing that song. But a lot of the songs on Persian Garden, those are all first songs, and those are all songs that I just kept playing, and I was like, I'm not gonna stop playing these.
Yeah, it's gone from Cold Apartment Floors to Dropping Apartment. The Floors and been the Cold Apartment.
Yep. Yep.
And probably, I mean, I've been to Silent Barn a bunch of times, and it's a very friendly audience to play to, and probably just like looking out and seeing lots of supportive, smiling faces helped with that initial jump to, oh my God, I'm playing shows.
Right. Yeah. I mean, having a group of people who ride so hard for you, like, even if you're not there, even if you're not as good as they're saying that you are, it definitely gives you the space to like go there. You know, it gives you the space to like tell yourself that you are as good as they think you are. And with that like margin, you can really do a lot. And yeah, it's all about like the support. And I haven't been there in a long time. I think it's kind of a rolling class of people. I
mean,
there's like a whole group of young kids there and younger kids there who are like putting up their people and putting up, you know. And so it's cool that like a whole wave of, there are a bunch of more rap shows at Silent Barn now, which is so cool. So yeah, I'm definitely talking about Silent Barn at like a specific time. And I don't know too much of what it's like these days, but Yeah.
Are there certain people in the DIY community maybe who were of that upper class when you first started out who you still use as models for what you're doing?
I feel like I entered that scene really when everyone was still planting seeds, like everyone who's like making music on this really cool scale now and has a lot of show, you know, Mitski and Aaron, like Porches and Greta, like all of those people were still cultivating something at the time. And so it didn't feel too much like I was like looking up to anyone. But there are a lot of people who ran the space or who kept it. Maria Sherman, who we mentioned before, like tweeted about my EP one day. And then like Lars from NPR retweeted it or tweeted about something else with it. And it just became this thing. Or Liz Pelly, who would like exclusively tweet about Vagabond at one point. Mm-hmm. And so those people just like kept like was like, oh, I heard this. And that support is so tight.
Yeah.
It feels really nice. And I really love all those people.
Did touring with Alison Crutchfield come out of that, like connections there?
Not really. Alison told her booking agent that she was really liking my songs and the time was right. And we kind of went on and we just became friends on tour.
Cool.
Yeah.
And talking about all this and like DIY music and just really starting it all yourself, a lot of this you laid out in the piece with the Creative Independent, kind of a how-to guy. But is there anything now that seems especially important to tell the listeners?
Maybe not incredibly urgent. I think I'm still like figuring a lot of this out too as I go. It seems I talk a lot. So I talk a lot about it as I'm going, like as I'm parsing through it in my head.
Sure.
So right now I don't have any definite concretes, but
yeah,
I'm plotting.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe things like you've found yourself and taken note of in your head that maybe just don't see people talking about it. Like, oh, people should know about this.
I feel like a lot of what I have that reaction to, I like talked about in the piece, you know, with the booking agent stuff and the press stuff, that kind of seems among my friends who are still very much like, you know, making the Bandcamp albums that people may not see that are really good, have a lot of questions about it. And so I think I answered it a lot on that piece.
Cool. See what else. We were talking about touring all over and like being to so many different places of America. Like, what have you learned about places you haven't been to? Like, what have you learned about America lately?
One thing that I learned that was pretty surprising is that almost every town in this country has a music community. And it varies in size and it varies in what it's into, you know, like Boise is probably really into like dance music.
Boise?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They have a lot of like DJ night, like those are the shows that like sell out in Boise, like DJ, EDM, dance music.
Interesting.
It's really cool. Huh. But then, you know, the cool people in Boise who want to see like a rock show or a punk show or whatever else, a show with the vocals and stuff, those people come out too. And I think I was surprised by that.
Yeah, so I guess you see lots of parallels between this sort of community all across.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And some people, I mean, expanding it past the U.S., like my first show in London in May, you know, completely sold out 3 months in advance, and that shocked me. I was like, I don't understand how anyone over there even knows what is going on.
How do you know who I am?
Yeah, how do you, I had no idea, because I don't know how people really find music and like, but that stuff is so cool to me because those people looked for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, you know, I'm out here on billboards in London. So it was that's really cool that you could be indie and smallish, but there are those people who are going to show the fuck up for you.
Yeah. What is it like putting together these tours? Because you're like finding not only places to perform at, but also a lot of times is people's houses and whatnot to stay at. It seems like it's good to have this whole network of people all around who are on the same page.
Yeah. I think it's like that stuff is a lot like gear, right? You accumulate it over time. Like very few people can have all the gear that they want or like all the best gear on just one shopping trip. So all the like resources of tour kind of comes over time. Before Infinite Worlds came out, I was touring the US pretty constantly on an EP for 2 years. Even if people were sick of hearing those songs, I wasn't sick of playing them. So I just kept being on tour. And all of those people are the same folks that I meet and talk to. And overseas, it's a little less, right? Like, I have to stay in a hotel probably, or because I don't have that same longevity touring there as I do in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Have you gone back to Cameroon at all to perform, or is that something you've even thought of?
I have not. That seems like a far-fetched dream. Like, I was thinking of where would that even happen? Like, what is there a venue for that? But, of course, it would be cool. It would be cool to do that one day. But yeah, I don't know.
Do you still have family and friends there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so yeah. You've got some people who would come out.
Yeah, no, for sure. People would come, you know? It'd be like my screaming family. But I don't know how feasible it actually is to plan that.
Something to get the ball rolling on.
Yeah, yeah. It maybe one day.
Start the scene.
That'd be insane. Yeah.
So talk about what you have coming up, the tour, other plans, maybe surprises. What's going on?
Yeah, I am doing my first headlining of the U.S. starting September 12th and going everywhere for a month. And then right after that, I'm doing headlining in Europe and a few festivals like London Calling. Pitchfork Paris has an avant-garde 2-day thing that I'm also playing. I'm doing Iceland in November.
Oh, awesome. That's
yeah.
So awesome.
I can't wait for that.
It's the Airwaves Festival?
Yeah.
I was in Iceland a couple years ago, coincidentally during the festival.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You didn't go for the festival?
No, I just like went on a trip, like an actual vacation with my
sick
friend. I wasn't going as like to cover for Billboard.
Yeah. Oh, wow. How was it?
It was neat. It's just like a more Icelandic version of a South by. It's like you walk down, like it's Reykjavik is the one big city,
right?
And you walk through the downtown area and there's just, you know, people playing in bars, people playing in restaurants, and there was like an outerwear store, like a storefront where there was a band inside there performing, just like there's live music just everywhere.
That's pretty cool. Well, I'm excited for that.
Yeah,
I'm excited to be in Iceland.
Take lots of pictures.
Iceland
is it's a trip.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. That's kind of one of the big things that I'm looking forward to for this year. And yeah, going to be announcing some cool shit. Can I say shit?
Yeah.
Okay, cool shit.
You can say shit.
announcing some cool shit before the year's over. And yeah, definitely, you know, new music and a New York show, finally.
They have a really great sense of humor in Iceland.
Yeah?
They're very sarcastic, very dry sarcasm.
Ooh, I'm excited.
It's good.
I can get down with that.
Awesome. So put it all out there. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, I think that's all. I just want everyone to come to shows.
Yeah, you should also shout out your socials, handles for the people.
Cool. On Twitter, @VagabondVagabond, no D at the end, and Instagram is the same thing, VagabondVagabond.
Yeah, have you ever dealt with confusions with people thinking your name is Vagabond?
All the time. I am convinced that people don't know how to find my music right now as we speak.
Why is it double Vagabond?
It's just because just one wasn't available.
Someone had Vagabond?
Yeah. Yeah, every combination of every letter is taken.
Yeah, you gotta make do.
You gotta make it work. So
awesome.
@Vagabond Vagabond.
There it is. Get the right one, no Vagabond.
No Vagabond.
We're good. Yeah, thanks so much to Laetitia for coming by. Her tour, which we talked about, starts September 12th in Rhode Island, and she goes all over the U.S. for the next couple months. Check her Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff for dates. And also, I wouldn't be surprised if she shares some new music in the near future, as we were talking about. Wouldn't be surprised. So, you heard the talk. Sounds like she's working on some neat stuff. We've got some more neat artist interviews coming up. I'm actually in the middle this week of recording a bunch of these podcast interviews out of the Billboard office. There's three that I can think of off the top of my head that are happening before August is over. So to find out who, Subscribe to the show, get it every week automatically. Go to iTunes or the podcast app on your phone. Search for hashtag alternative facts, all one word. Do it, leave a star rating, write in some feedback to keep up with the show. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm always dropping hints on there, talking about who's coming through, giving little previews, just riffing on whatever. Twitter handle is at CPayne on a plane, or just search for Chris Payne. I'm the first name that comes up. That's all I got for you guys right now. Thanks so much for listening. As always, it's a weekly podcast, and I'll see you next Thursday. Bye-bye.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.